rise again.
Finn Greenall, who goes by the name Fink, has frequently visited the Czech Republic over the past 2.5 decades, and last week performed songs from his band's powerful new LP, Resurgam, to enthusiastic audiences in Brno and Prague. Ahead of his show at the capital's Roxy venue, I spoke to the UK musician about his unusual commitment to playing in the former Eastern Bloc. But my conversation with Greenall began with the new record.
The starting point for Resurgam was like, my diary's pretty full. I've got a lot of plates spinning at the same time. And we wanted to get together and on a specific date. So we did. We got together and we said, hey, we're going to do this new album. What are we going to do? And originally we said we're going to do singles first and then fill the rest of the record up. And just like every other artistic process, we ended up doing the total opposite of that, where we wrote loads of singles that were cut and all the album tracks that were much better, we ended up recording.
Was Resurgam the first track you did? Because it sounds like kind of call to arms.
Resurgam, when we loaded into the studio with Flood, and we loaded all our gear in, and we had a week at the front of the studio time to get comfortable, get our instruments into place and stuff like that. And we ran Resurgam, the track, as a practice piece to feel comfortable. And that's the version that's on the record, is the first take of Resurgam on the first day.
What does the word mean? It sounds like some kind of like mood-altering drug, kind of pick-me-up or something like that.
It's like, well, maybe it is, because it's kind of like got a religious overtone, so maybe it's some kind of opiate involved, but it means I will rise again. I got it from a beautiful little thing in a church near where I was born. The deal is that when you die, if you've got loads of money, you make a big painting with your coat of arms on it, and you write Resurgam on it as if to say, in the second coming, remember me, this is my painting, come and get me. And I found this word resonated with me loads, and I think it's optimistic, and it's like an active word. I will rise again, not hopefully I'll rise again, or maybe I'll be back. It's like, I will rise again. And that's what it feels like every time we start a new record, you know, it's like a blank page. And you know, it taps into all of these questions about relevancy and, like, is anyone listening out there? Sometimes it's very hard to tell, you know, and so Resurgam, it just felt like, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm going to rise again anyway.
You mentioned Flood, who has produced some of the world's biggest artists like U2, Depeche Mode and so on. What did it mean for you to get him on board?
Well, man, you know, he has produced Depeche Mode and U2 and Nick Cave, PJ Harvey, and I knew about him from the PJ Harvey work. But he produced, in the modern age, he produced the second Warpaint album, which to me is my generation's masterpiece production work. It's amazing. So Flood means something. It's some intangible quality control thing going on, and the artists that he's worked with are difficult. You know, Dave Gahan, Bono, Nick Cave, these are difficult artists. So he's obviously got some special skill set, and he really does have. I can't tell you what it is, but he's really good at dealing with you on a artistic, musical level, and he makes you feel comfortable, but at the same time, you want to impress Flood, because it's Flood. So you play better than you've ever played, you write better than you've ever written, because it's Flood. He raises you up, he really does. He's super approachable, super lovely guy, but at the same time, when he tells you to do something, you know he's probably said that to Nick Cave, so he knows what he's talking about.
So how does the new album compare to previous records you've put out?
It's more minimal, but with more music in it. It's full of these strange little dichotomies, really. It's like, it's the best songs I've ever written, but they're the most economical. The vocal performances are much more aggressive and stronger and vulnerable. A fan told me last night before the show in Brno that it sounded like a record as opposed to 10 songs. And all of my records, I think, it can be criticised for being a collection of songs as opposed to albums. And I admit that, that's fair enough. This one sounds like a coherent record, and Flood is the reason for that.
One reason I wanted to speak to you, as well as the fact you have a new album out and you're playing in Prague, is you had a piece in The Guardian a year or two ago, a kind of guide to Prague that was really excellent.
Nice.
I wanted to ask you about your relationship with Prague. Tell us about it.
I've got a long relationship with Prague. I was in Prague in 92, and we stayed here for a couple of weeks, and it was like the East, very much so the East. Everything was incredibly cheap. Everything felt old and held together with tape, and it was just, oh, it made a big impression because it's so incredibly beautiful and it was so unspoiled, you know. We went to Budapest as well straight afterwards, and that was more of a functioning modern city in the same situation, but Prague was just some amber medieval situation. And I just absolutely loved it. I thought about buying a place here. It was, you could buy a, me and my partner at the time realized we could work as, I could work as a waiter and she could work as a waitress, and a year later we could buy a place in the Jewish quarter. It was that affordable. But we didn't. Shame. And then I DJed here a ton of times. I played here a ton of times. Played Meat Factory a load of times, but I never saw the city. And then last time I was here, we played Roxy, and we had a day off, and I got to walk around 23 years later. And it was unrecognizable to me. And it's the globalization and things. There's some fantastic things about globalization, like health and, you know, medicine and science. But EasyJet, snag nights and strip bars, and it's not really what I expected. But the one thing I really have felt from the ground up here in the past 4 or 5 years is this groundswell of local culture and local art culture. And I feel this all over. We just toured the Balkans and the Baltics and Scandinavia, and especially in places like Riga and Tallinn and Vilnius, you have this generation that's gone to uni, maybe gone to London for a couple of years, come back and gone, no, I want to live in Vilnius. It's my city now. What do I want? I want coffee houses, I want trendy shops, I want, you know. I feel that. I really feel it here.
Have you had any particular kind of standout experiences here?
Well, the first time I came here, I had this lovely experience trying to buy a loaf of bread where you had to go into the supermarket, look at the bread, go to a different counter, get a ticket, go to another counter, pay for the ticket, and then go back to the bread counter. And if it was still there, you got to have the bread. I thought that was pretty cool. And lately, my favorite memory of Prague is this bar that's really near here called Locale, where you can buy the sausage of the day and have a beer. And I just think that's just as pure. I'm vegetarian now, so I won't be able to do that. And I'm also a teetotal, but yeah. That brings back very good memories, you know.
I have the impression that you tour more in Eastern Europe than many British artists. Why is that?
Ah, because we're not lazy. Well, I suppose on the yin side of things, because we love to play for our fans wherever they are, and our agent said years ago, if you don't go, you never know. So let's book the Roxy. 200 people might show up, so you won't come back. 1,200 people might show up, and then Prague's on the tour. Even on this tour, we've opened up 3 new countries on this tour we've never been to before, just because we want to know whether or not we can play Estonia and Latvia. So we played Riga and Tallinn, and they were great shows. And on the last tour, we played for the first time Sofia and Vilnius and Bucharest. And the people are the same in the gigs. They just happen to live in these eastern places. We're trying to open Minsk and Belarusia and Kiev. We just did a cracking show in the Ukraine. And they make it difficult for you. The borders, the visas. You have to build a day off in between, a day to get in and a day to get out with the borders. And, you know, it's tough to do it. But I think the more these new young markets emerge, the more they'll become on the usual tour trail. Like everybody does Paris, everyone does Amsterdam, everyone does London and Brussels and Munich and yada yada. And in 5 years' time, everyone will do Vilnius and everyone will do Prague. It's just British bands, they tend to get caught up in the UK. And it's a bit of a trap, because it's the busiest market in the world, it's the noisiest market in the world, and it's not the biggest country in the world. So you can do a 50-date tour of the UK. That's your year kind of done. Or you can do 5 dates in the UK, 5 in France, 5 in Germany, 5 in Austria. You know what I mean? And Finkers, we're so lucky that early on in our career, we had a hit in France, and that got us out of the UK. So our UK tour was like 20 dates, and then we'd do Paris and Lyon and Marseille and Bordeaux. So we were an international band. And if you're in Paris, you might as well do Amsterdam. And if you're in Amsterdam, you might as well do Brussels. And if you're in Brussels, you might as well do Frankfurt, and so on and so on. We take the profit from the big gigs, and we basically pay to play the smaller gigs. We have a luxury nightliner sat outside, and that's not cheap. And sometimes we're playing 300 capacity venues in, you know, Novi Sad in Serbia. Someone's losing money there. But next time we play Novi Sad, there'll be 1,000 people there.
You mentioned playing in Minsk. Belarus is often called Europe's last totalitarian state.
No doubt.
How did it feel being there?
It feels like Europe's last totalitarian state. When you go to places like Brno and Kiev. You're expecting, I think, what Minsk is, a very, very industrial Soviet architecture. It's grey, it's cold, everybody's quite suspicious. You stand out, you know, you're not normal. There's undercover policemen at the gigs. The border takes 7 hours. You feel it, you know, and a lot of people are kind of theoretical communists in the West. Go to Belarus and think about living there, and I think that's probably what it was like for most people. It's pretty bleak. Kiev is different because it's such a beautiful city, and Czech Republic has got such a deep history, a very beautiful history. Obviously, this area was rich when architecture was quite pretty, so... But some of these dictatorial states, you can feel it in the air. And it's not very... when you leave, you feel like, wow, that's what it's like.